This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Door, bumper, clear.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Door Bumper Clear, presented by our amazing sponsor, OfferPad. I'm Brett Griffin, man. We're back from Darlington. We're going to cover all kinds of good stuff. Joey Logano's winning move, if that's what you want to call it. The backstretch pileup, Kyle Busch's valet parking, and a massive announcement for your favorite podcast, Door Bumper Clear. It's a big deal. Let's go.
Nobody's listening, but I don't care. I'm on an episode of Door Bumper Clear.
Hey, everybody. I'm TJ Majors, spotter of the six cup car, the 68 Xfinity car, and the one truck full weekend. And we have a extremely full house today.
We do, man. Star-studded full house. Brett Griffin, spotter for Colleague Racing. Beside me used to be Air Freddy. Now he's Flory Freddy after last night.
What was that?
Flory Freddy.
What's up? Freddy Kraft, spotter Bubba Wallace. I had Derek Krause, Landon Castle this week. Solid week in Darlington. Hey, Casey.
Hey, hey. Glad you made it to the show.
Yeah, of course. I'm always
glad
here.
You made it.
And next to me, we have the lovely producer, Jason.
Who's mic-less
today. He doesn't have
today.
A mic, so he says hi to everybody. Freddie, who do we have on the show today?
We got my dad's here. My I have the pleasure of calling this gentleman my second dad because he is basically my second dad. He's given me my first cup job. He's done a lot for me in my career. What's up, TB?
What's up, guys? How you
so
doing?
So we have you to blame for, this guy over
Tommy
here.
Tommy Baldwin is in the house. Brett had teased this all week, and nobody got it until you get the initials. Yeah, yeah. And then once you get the initials, we said there's going to be an opinionated asshole on here, and then nobody said anything until we said TB, and everybody got Tommy Baldwin from there.
I don't think I'm opinionated. I just...
That's real.
I'm just real, you know? Yeah. Call it how it is.
Real opinionated.
Well, then you will fit right in on this show.
I can tell y'all right now, if you're listening, this will be a show that goes off the rails when Tommy Baldwin starts sharing his real opinions because he's semi-retired these days,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Tommy Baldwin grew up around racing his entire life. Dad's a modified legend. I had the privilege of going to the first golf tournament when we celebrated Tom's life, and maybe you should just start there and tell everybody why we no longer do that golf tournament there.
We caused a lot of damage with golf carts. We still kind of do it every year, but no longer in Long Island. Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
So back to being real. You grew up around racing, man. Like it's literally all you've ever done.
Yeah, basically, I've started. You know, my dad's repair shop, which now I have, own now with another one. We have over 30 employees up in Long Island. But, I started going to the shop at probably 5-6 years old, started pumping gas because it was a little old gas station in the beginning at 8, checking the customer's oil and filling their fuel, and moved to the oil changing, moved to cleaning the shop. And next thing you know, I was working on the race cars. And, I got to, you know, thank goodness I started early. Learned a lot in the beginning about hard work ethic, and here we are talking to you guys.
Yeah, this is literally the top of your career.
Oh, Lord.
You've done it.
Mo, Larry, and Curly.
So when you moved south, what was your first job?
So
you've got to tell the story moving south.
Yeah, let's back up a little bit. So Kevin Mannion and I, Bono/Bono, we were having pretty good success up in New England. We won a lot of races with Steve Park. And I think it was 94 or 95. We won 7 out of the last 11 modified races. And we just decided that, at the end of the year, we were going to take a chance. So Greg Sachs gave us a call. Just so happened to give us a call for the first Miami race.
Oops, yeah,
sorry.
You're good.
The first Miami race. that they were having. And he asked if Bone and I can come down and work on his car and crew chief it and help it. So, yeah, sure, you know, we'll do that. So we flew down. He goes, yeah, all you guys got to do is set it up. That's all you got to do. So we flew into, I can't even remember where we flew. We drove to Sam Sewler into this one car garage, and the car was completely apart. Had no crush panels, no windows, no nothing. Now, Bone and I, we were not
stock car guys.
We were modified guys. So I looked at Bono. He looked at me. I said, well, let's get to work. So 2 days later, straight days later, we got the car together. We were on our way to Florida. Showed up. There was 60 cars, I believe, you know, over 60 cars because it was the first Miami race. And had a good practice, qualified sixth, not having an idea what we were doing yet. So we sat at that pretty much in a hotel room in Keys. He put us up in a real nice place, and we looked at each other, and I looked at Bono. I said, you know, we can do this. We can come down there, you know, down south here and do this. And you know, Bono, obviously, you guys know he's a pretty quiet guy. He just shook his head. Mm-hmm. So we were running a top 10, and the windshield, back then there were real glass windshields, and the glass windshield strap came loose, and we got black flag, and we came in, unfortunately. So went back to Long Island. I just woke up one day on a Saturday morning. I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm moving. I'm just going to take a chance. I didn't have any job. I didn't do anything. So I called Bono up. I said, I'm leaving at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. And he's lived up in Massachusetts. I was in Long Island. And I said, I'm leaving at 4 a.m. Are you coming or not? He's like, I'll call you back.
And how old are you at this time?
26, 25, yeah. Somewhere around there. Yeah. And, 2 hours later, he said, all right, I'm coming. So he had a red pickup truck. He drove, took the ferry over to Long Island, came to the house. He had a stereo, two bags of clothes, a green garbage bag of clothes, and a suitcase. So we loaded, I loaded a bunch of stuff in my dad's truck and trailer. We parked his truck at my dad's shop, put for sale best offer, and we were gone. So we moved down south and come down here. We met Georgiano Otto at the time, and she put us up in a house. Within one day, we had the place rented, fully furnished. We went to Badcock furniture, and there's another story. But next thing you know, we were sitting there, and we were like, okay, we're here.
That was it.
Looked around and like, okay, we got to get a job. So we went out. I went and sat with Ray Everham, and he got me a night job at the 25 Budweiser car at the time, doing some night work. Ricky Craven called him up. I said, hey, I need a car chief for the 41 Kodiak Cup car. And Ray said, yeah, I got the guy for you. And that's what got me started. So we started as a car chief. I got Bono a job as a mechanic. We moved a couple more people down from Long Island because the plate, you know, there wasn't many people working there at the time.
Right.
Started off real strong. We were fourth in points. Still hardly knowing what we're doing, but we're digging, faking it. And we're fourth in points going into Talladega, and that's when Ricky crashed real bad, and kind of the wheels kind of fell off at that time, you know, from there on. And 10 months later, I got offered a job with Harry and Lauren Rainier to put together a brand new cup team. At the time, this young kid was supposed to be driving at Tony Stewart. And I said, okay. So I built a team from the ground up. So I'm only here at 10 months. I built a team from the ground up. Bono ended up coming with me, and we moved, I think, about 20 families down from Long Island, New England area. And we started off at a test in Atlanta. We started off as an ARCA car with Tony driving, and I think we were half a second faster than the field with the ARCA car. Back then, 50 cars would show up and test. Yeah. And I was like, all right, let's stay the next day for the cup test, because really the only thing that was different from ARCA to cup back then was the spoiler height and the tires. So we cut the spoiler and put Goodyears on it, and I think we were third fastest the next day. So I'm like, all right, man, this kid's pretty good. We can do something here. And on us not knowing, Tony was already in talks with Joe Gibbs at the time.
Oh, wow.
And decided...
How old was Tony at this point?
I don't even know. It was in 95, so I don't...
He was definitely his 20s, yeah, upper 20s.
He was pretty young. And
Lauren Air found a lot of guys
he
like did. That.
He did. He's still finding guys like that. So yeah.
I saw he's working with Gavin Bochel now.
Yep.
Man, so when you actually came here, you didn't come here as a freaking crew guy. I mean, you went straight to the top.
Yeah, I got pretty lucky. I faked my way for a little bit. Still,
Tommy always told me, "Fake it till you make it."
Yeah, fake it till you make it. You know, and the good thing is I had good car background. I knew the mechanics of the car, so the rest of the stuff was pretty easy. I've called races since I was 14 years old. With my dad spotted at the same time, so I kind of knew the whole background of racing.
Tommy's rough on spotters, by the way.
I'm well aware.
It's because he was one. So when you get to Evernham's as a crew chief, I mean, obviously a ton of success, Bill Davis, won Daytona 500 with Ward Burton, Southern 500 too, right,
yep.
With Ward.
Yep.
But when you get to Evernham Racing, it's full circle for you to be a crew chief for Ray at that point?
It was. It was pretty cool to back up a little bit earlier than that. In 2001, when Ray announced the Dodge deal,
yep.
I signed the contract to be Jeff Gordon's next crew chief.
Oh, wow. Instead of Robbie Loomis, it was you.
Yes.
Wow.
It was done deal. They were getting ready to announce it. And so I went into Bill Davis's office. I said, "Hey, I just want to let you know I'm going to be leaving here. I'm going to crew chief for Jeff Gordon." Obviously, he took it pretty hard. I called Ward. He took it really hard. But the two things that really changed the course was I called my dad and I said, "Hey, I just want to let you know." I was all excited. I said, "I'm getting ready to go. I'm going to crew chief Jeff Gordon. You know, I got a nice, I think it was 4 or 5 year deal." And I got silence on the phone. He's like, why you want to do that?" I'm like, what do you mean? I'm
Jeff Gordon. That's
right. I'm going to go crew chief Jeff Gordon. He goes, "They already have a dynasty over there. You're building one now. You're building your own dynasty here with Bill Davis Racing. Why do you want to move?" So I hung up the phone. I'm like, oh, crap, man. Now what am I going to do?
Here comes peer pressure from my dad.
Here goes, you know, that thought process there that you never thought about. So then I called my son, who, you know, Tommy III, who was, you know, young at the time. Yeah. And I called him, and he started crying because he was friends with Jeb, and he's friends with Ward. You know, why are you leaving there? So I'm sitting there with my, you know, my hands over my head in the office, and I think Michigan weekend was at the time. And I called Ray up. He just got off the plane. I said, "Hey, you got to rip that contract up. I'm not coming." He's like, "What? I'm not coming. Just please rip it up." Because me and him were friends. We've known each other. He's right. Known me since 10, 11 years old. And thank goodness he ripped it up for me and continued. And we ended up winning the Daytona 500 together. But probably the biggest mistake I've made in the sport, now looking back, that
right.
You know, all the achievements that I'm glad what I've done, I've accomplished.
Yeah.
But what else could I have accomplished if I did that?
Yeah. So you are following your brain right until your dad tugged on
your
heart.
Yeah. I was doing good. And
the damn tiger had that ability on people.
Yeah, like, he did.
He just look at you and you knew you were.
Yeah. He can move mountains with his looks for sure. And, but going back to Ray's deal, yeah, that was a good deal. And, I stepped into a nice deal that they had a lot of information and, a lot of good guys. The cars were really, really good at the time, and I think we had some pretty good success. We couldn't, for some reason, we couldn't get over that start finish line first. But I think we had 9 seconds the first year or something.
It was insane.
Yeah, we were running good, but again, as we kept getting caught with stuff that we had in the car, the simulation stuff started not matching up.
Yeah,
and Ray had an engineer-driven company, and he lived and died by that engineer-driven company. So when it stopped working for a while, you know, certain people get looked at it. You're the guy, and it's like, look, I'm the crew chief.
It's your engineering.
And again, yeah. Me being straight up, going, well, you need to fix the situations that's the problem. I'm still calling the race. I'm still doing it. So just didn't work out. Unfortunately, I ended up.
Was that the last fight you got in as a crew guy?
No.
Was while you're at Evernham?
Some got thrown out of Legends car racing.
How do you
year?
Get thrown out of Legends car racing?
Well, I think we'll get into that a little bit later when we start talk about Darlington.
Did not want to talk about that.
No, we're going to talk about it.
We have to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. But no, I mean, I like fighting, but I can fight it.
You got in a fight at a Legends car
no,
race?
No. I just got in a couple arguments.
He beat the shit out of a 6-year-old.
No, I did not.
Thrown out.
No, I did not.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I did not. I did not beat anybody.
No, he did not beat anybody up. He tried. He wanted to.
I yelled at every parent and every kid. every official in the place before I left. Got a 2 week suspension.
I got
my point across.
He got his point across, and then I got a call from Tommy that was, "Hey, what are you doing for like the next 2 weeks on a Tuesday?" And I was like, "What? What do you mean?"
He's
like,
"Oh, that's when you and Doug went.
You got to take you and Doug. Got to take Jack and Priest.
And Priest.
Yeah, we had an all star crew over there. It was me, Doug, and Priest, and Tommy was thrown out. And the listen, this deal over there at Summer Shootout is a show, a full blown show because." I went there for 2 weeks, I think. What did you get thrown out for 2 weeks? I went there for 2 weeks with Jack, his son, and I think we ran 7 laps in the 2 weeks I was there because they just wreck
run
everybody.
Over each other.
The curfew's only like 20 minutes. I told Tommy, I said, don't ever get thrown out again because I'm not going. I love your kids, but I'm never going back there again.
Yeah, it's.
I'm guessing you got run over.
No, no, we didn't. I don't think we. Well,
no, I'm guessing
only,
that.
He only wrecked his cousin or whatever.
Well. Just these, we'll probably
so
get
questions.
In. We're going to get into this later, trust me.
Yeah. Before we get into the serious part of the show, why we actually wanted you to come on, Freddie wanted you to come on, talk about some of the Hall of Fame stuff. I wanted to keep right. But I got to ask you a very serious question. There, you brought a lot of spotters, a lot of people in general, but a lot of spotters into the sport. I mean, you've probably got 3 or 4 guys on the roof right now that are up there because you gave them a chance. I want to know how Doug Campbell – and he spots for Austin Cindric, Daytona 500 winner this year, got the nickname Sperm. And I want to know how in the hell he connived you into hiring him to begin with.
Well, it was Mike Kalinoff who was the biggest conniver of everybody.
That's funny. He lived with him.
Yeah. Well, not even yet.
Is that your fault too?
So Mike called me up and said, "Hey man, you're looking for a spotter up in New Hampshire, you know, I got this kid that's been spotting. He's really good." I said, yeah. You know, right away, I just need somebody. You know, with my own team, I just needed somebody up. Yeah, let's get him. We'll see how he does. Okay, cool. That's how it was with Mike. If Mike called and he needs something, I wanted something with me or vice versa, yeah, that's what we did. You know, we trusted each other at the time. So here comes Doug. So he comes up. "Hey, I'm Doug." Boom. He goes up there, spots. You know, he does okay. Obviously, Kalinoff's right next to him at the time, just telling him what to do. So it all turns out that Doug's only spotted one race in his whole life, a modified race.
Did good though, right?
I guess. I mean, you know, I guess he did okay, you know. But as it went on, I'd noticed that he needed a lot of work, and it's a very important job. You guys know spotting. People think that you guys it's easy, you know, what you guys do, but it's not. It's very hard.
And you've been on the roof a lot.
Yeah, I've been on the roof a lot, and because I understand, thank goodness, at an early age what to do and how to do that. But Freddie came in, he got yelled at. Doug came in, he got yelled at. Joey came in, he got yelled at. A couple other guys came in, they got yelled at because they're all from up north. You know, that's the only way they're going to listen is you yell at them because that's what we do.
That's how it went.
So, Doug. I was really mad at Doug one time. I mean, I have everybody on scanner, and they're calling a caution. And we're all, you know, the wreck was in Charlotte. It was going into 3. We're just in the middle of 1 and 2 because I just watched Blaney just go in there. And they already said, okay, wreck in turn 2. Doug doesn't even say anything. And I'm like, we're in it. I'm like, well, how did we get in it? So I went on a rant. And I basically said, you know, I said, you know, you're not... I can't remember how I said it. I said, you're sperm. And he's like, what is, you know, it took him a couple days and it's like,
you're sperm.
He's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, you're not even real yet. You know, you're up there and you're not even real. You're just sperm, you know?
Oh,
so that's how it.
You're
that's
not
how
really
it.
Yet.
So now to make it worse, his brother's nickname is Little Sperm.
Yeah, well, that's how we had to start.
Oh my gosh!
Right from the beginning, just because we had to do it.
Thank God they don't have another brother.
I'll never forget. I was in Martinsville spotting for Tommy, and believe it or not, Tommy's got a little bit of a temper. And he'll yell at me. He'll yell at anybody. Don't matter who it is. And Kelly Kent, who was Mike Herman's girlfriend, was in the suite down there below us where Tommy was sitting. And I get home or whatever, and she's like, "Oh my God, you should have heard Tommy. He was screaming and yelling and cursing, and I'm glad it wasn't on the radio." I said, No, that was on the radio. I said he was yelling at me at the time.
you were getting yelled at.
Yeah, we all got yelled at. But like you said, that's I wouldn't be where I'm at without Tommy. And the only reason I got better at my job was because Tommy would scream at me and yell at me if I did anything wrong.
Well, the way I look at it is, whatever happens to them now is not a big deal, because they can handle any situation.
We were in a situation like that with Pops. And Tony Sr. he'd let you know pretty quickly if you did something wrong. Me and Brad, we were scared to go into the garage a couple times working with him. But, you took your lashings and you learned from it. And you know what? 5 minutes later, though, it was fast. Like, no grudge carried over, nothing. You learned your lesson. You moved on. But there is a lot of... I do think there's some benefit to learning like that, though, too.
As hard as Tommy's ever been on me, I mean, I appreciate all of it. I've thanked him 1,000 times. The look on, I've talked about it on his podcast, the look on his face at the Daytona 500 this year, when Doug, me, and Joey finished top three, he's running up and down the spotter stand, high-fiving us, hugging us. He was as proud as any moment I've ever seen, and I'll never forget that about looking at him that night. He's like, you three idiots did it.
Could you imagine if what if Doug would have ran his car into the wall coming to the line? Would he have been happy then?
No. Oh boy. No. But that was a good time. It was to see these guys grow up,
For sure.
And get to where they got to now, to who they're working for, what they're doing. I'm proud of that.
What are you up to, Freddie? Like 2.4?
I'm 289 now, I think. To go back to Brett, what I wanted you to come on for, and I know this because you've told me about this story for years now, that you've been a Hall of Fame voter. And I know that in years past, you probably had to go to bat for a guy like Mike Stefanik a lot. And I kind of wanted to get a glimpse into that room of what that looks like. When is there a guy speaking on behalf of each driver? Is there, what does that look like in that room?
So we all get a book on all the information on all the Hall of Fame nominees. Obviously, they're split up to three groups now. So we all get all the information. And to be honest with you, usually there's someone that's getting in that's very popular. They might not have the stats, but they've done enough in the sport to get nominated for the Hall of Fame. So this year, if you look, there wasn't anybody really popular.
Standing out, right.
So the more and more I looked at it, I'm like, this is a stat Hall of Fame vote. This has nothing to do with being popular. So that was my thought process going in. That's what I was going to speak about. So basically, they'll bring all of us in. They'll show videos of all the different nominees of what they accomplished. We all get the same information, and they'll open up the mic, and we all have the chance to get up and speak on their behalfs. In the past, there was a lot of there was three, four people that we were pretty much all battling for different. So you never left the place knowing really, except for Dale Earnhardt or, Tony Stewart, or you never left knowing that these guys were definitely going to be. When Mike Stefanik was in there, it was pretty close until Ned Jarrett stood up and spoke on Mike Stefanik's behalf. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I think that sealed the deal. After I went on my speech about Mike and the stories, and some other people finally got up and talked. When Ned got up and Ned spoke on, I said, now we got something. So thank goodness he did that. And obviously Mike, well-deserving in the Hall of Fame. But this year, when I got up and spoke, it was just about the stats. And it was pretty clear after everybody speaking that everybody, for some reason this year, was pretty much on the same page. So when we got done, I kind of knew who was going to be in it. The biggest thing was Mike Helton. None of us really wanted to vote for Mike Helton for the position he was in. We all wanted him to be honored
in the Hall of Fame,
right. And then we would have voted him in immediately.
Right.
The only reason why he didn't get in last time is because we were like, no, we told him right to his face, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
We
the
want
legacy
you
deal. Yeah.
We want you in the real one.
Yeah.
So when They finally got up and vote, said that, you know, he can end up still getting into that, which now he won't, in my opinion. Glad he got in because, you know, he has been a mentor to so many of us. And the guy is just the rock of the garage area. Still, when he walks in, he is the rock.
He's got a presence like no other.
There is nobody. And you can talk to him about anything. And he's the guy. To so many of us, so he's well deserving. And obviously Matt Kenseth had the best stats out of all the drivers. Kurt Schmidheen, I thought it was pretty close between him and Harry Eide, in my opinion, with the stats. But the four championships, I think, is what got Kurt in before Harry Eide. Harry Eide will get in eventually, I'm pretty sure, because of the stats. And if you look at it, the three or four crew chiefs that are on the in the nominees right now, I think we'll all get in eventually. There's only a couple more left now because the crew chief role has changed so much, right? There's only a couple more. There's no more car builders left. You know, they got a couple car builders in there. That's all gone. So I believe all these guys eventually will get in. It's just going to take some time. It depends on who gets nominated next year. You know, obviously, Jimmy Johnson and Chad come up next year. I mean, that's a no-brainer of what the accomplishments they did, in my opinion.
Right.
It's a real honor to be part of that. I think I'm the only of my age and what I've done to be part of that, and to look around and all the Hall of Famers that are in there and all the people that started this sport. You know, Mike Helton asked me to be, you know, wanted me to be on it, and he and it was an
that's
honor
an honor
for me
in and of itself. Yeah.
It was like 5-6 years ago, I think it was. And it's a great privilege.
Yeah. It's probably because you're slightly opinionated.
Yeah.
And I think that they
count. I'm not opinionated. I'm real.
Real.
Well, not opinionated. No.
Little do you know you're going to cuss out a 6-year-old.
I would like to see Tommy debating in this Hall of Fame with some people that, because listen, there are some people in there that don't understand and respect all the history of the sport, right? And so I could see you looking at some of those guys and being like, oh, how am I going to politely tell this guy he's an idiot?
Well, I think, you know, they have different people, some different people each time, but all of them are pretty well respected of what they have accomplished in the sport.
Right.
They and those people, believe it or not, know more about the deep history than you think, because they're part of different parts of the sport, whether they're track owners or promoters or knew these guys back 30, 40 years ago and how it started.
Right.
So it's fun listening. All of a sudden when they do speak, it's like, oh, they know what they're talking about.
Right, right. So you trust the process.
I trust the process. I think, in my opinion, there are probably too many writers in there, people who, you know, they know the sport because of their opinions of it.
Right, not living in the trenches.
They're not in the trenches. There's probably too many of them, but the ones that are in there are the ones that call the sport. So
right.
Then you look back and go, yes, they do deserve to be in there at a point because they are moving the needle in the media.
Right.
All of them that are there.
Yeah.
So you got to respect that too. So, but it is an honor.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll, Casey, you've been quiet over there for the last half hour.
This has been pretty interesting. So
The reason why, so I thought about this last week. I text Jason. I said I wanted to have somebody from the Hall of Fame room in there. And we were talking about McGee's been on here with us before. So I was kicking around the idea of McGee. And I said, I want somebody that's going to be able to stay on the show and have opinions about the race. And I know that Tommy does because I get a text every Sunday night about everything I did wrong during the race or my driver or everything Doug did wrong.
So this will be really fun.
So to this day, Tommy still criticizes everything the three of us, whether it's me, Doug, Priest, or Joey, we get a text every week of everything we've done wrong from Tommy. So my mind went right to Tommy about kicking off the show because he can tell us all about his opinions in Darlington like we do. So, Casey, go ahead and kick it off.
Don't worry. We have plenty of time for that.
Oh,
but
sure.
You picked a great episode to come on because we have a little bit of an announcement to make, don't we?
Gigantic announcement.
Fans, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've seen tweets and people come up to us asking for the opportunity to see us on TV. And I think we get that chance now. Is that right?
That's right. We were made for TV from the beginning.
Yes, you have a face for TV, that's for sure. So we are very excited to share that we will now be on MAV TV and MAV TV Plus.
In prime time.
Yes.
Don't leave that part out.
Yeah. When is this? When
Thursday at 7 p.m. is the official debut. So I think we need to have some sort of celebration, maybe without the alcohol for Freddie's sake.
We need a launch party. Yeah. Freddie started already. Yeah, we have a launch party.
You've had enough for it. I think a launch party is needed. 1 hour version of DBC will air every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and then a longer version will be available on MAV TV's subscription-based streaming platform, MAV TV Plus.
MAV TV is really brave. I want to give them credit for that right up front.
I am so sorry in advance for everything you guys might see on this show. I didn't think we'd ever be allowed to be, well, visible other than our YouTube videos where they can cut it out. So
I think this is brilliant.
I think this is amazing.
MAV TV is about to blow the up. It's going to be
the biggest network
and honestly,
in television history.
Why wasn't I told this before? I would have changed my contract. Is this the first one?
You're going to need to call Mike on this one.
Debut episode.
Mike Davis?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to his
blame
ass.
Mike.
He's snooking me
we
again.
All do. Yes, exactly. So
he gets me every week.
I would like
to. Yeah, welcome to the club here, man.
I would like to request that you guys keep it classy for the sake of our viewers and listeners.
We already did.
I know. That's the issue.
I know.
I should have said this earlier. Freddie walked in the door and I was like, well, shoot. There we go.
Are we getting beeped?
Jason, do you have to beep this whole show out for Matt too?
Okay, he already has a list. His beep list is pretty long.
Do I need to pull that fireball reference out again? Because there is a little chance that's going to happen.
And honestly, it's kind of a family affair. Like, I'll be on MAV TV through DBC. Chad's on MAV TV through Power and Midget Racing. All we need is Chloe to have her own show, and then we'll be set.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so, I'd watch Chloe's show. I don't know about you. And
it'd be a messy set, that's for sure.
We wouldn't be doing this without our listeners. So,
yeah, so
all you guys
that
have been jumping up and down, screaming on social media wanting this, here it is.
Watch us screw it up.
Trust me, I've seen us do it.
We need to do a tweet your seat type of thing. Can you guys share how you watch the show? Like, yeah. I kind of want to see this.
I don't know if you
want to. Tweet your seat.
Yeah, tweet your seat, okay? Every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Please, No nudity.
No nudity in these pictures, people.
Keep it classy, guys. Yeah.
We would also like to thank Bojangles for the awesome breakfast this morning. Freddie especially, since he is soaking.
Soak up some alcohol.
I'm honestly really proud of you for making it to the show.
I wish we had Lysol to spray all over you.
Oh my gosh.
I hadn't smelled anything since I got COVID. All I smell is booze over here.
He looks like he's half asleep. He can't even keep his eyes open.
No, you know how to tell Freddie's had a good night? Because he just doesn't keep smiling the whole time. He doesn't even know. He's just smiling.
Yeah. And lucky for you guys, you get to see it on TV. Prior to that, hear more a little bit more about our presenting sponsor, OfferPad.
Have you been thinking about buying or selling your home? Well, we know people that can make it happen quickly.
Our friends at OfferPad want to buy your home. They do real estate the way it should be, easy, and the process moves quickly.
To start, tell OfferPad about your home by completing a form that will take less than 5 minutes. Then within 24 hours, you'll receive an offer.
That cash offer is free with no obligation to sell. Once you receive your offer, you can review your options and decide what to do next.
I've got a funny feeling you'll like that cash offer and want to take it and get the rest of the moving process underway.
With OfferPad, you can sell without listing. There are no showings. You can pick your own closing day, and a free local move is included by these two over here.
We're headed to Kansas City this weekend out in the middle of the Midwest. And good news, if you live in the area or want to move there, OfferPad has a market in Kansas City, and we can help you make that big move.
If you love Kansas City barbecue as much as I do, you want to move there right away thanks to OfferPad.
When asked where you heard about OfferPad, select the NASCAR option so they know we sent you.
Spot on, spot off. It goes like this. Spot on means you agree.
I'm spot on.
Are you joking me?
He's lost his mind. Oh, and by the way, no one ever seems to agree. And then spot off means you disagree.
Spot off.
Here we go.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
But if you're TJ, there's only one correct answer.
I don't know.
It's time for Spot On, Spot Off.
Spot On, Spot Off, Joey Logano's winning move on William Byron entering turn three with two laps to go. TJ.
Why?
TJ.
Obviously.
I thought you were the ass this time, and now that you're gone, he's still wrecking people.
See? I mean, I got wrecked on lap two.
I want you to be real on this take. TJ. Like, don't, come on. Here we go. Like,
don't be. Don't
this
be
is your shot.
This is not Penske, TJ. This is, right?
I'm spot off because, he wrecked him. Like, he was going to spin out if that wall wasn't there. Tore up a race car. Didn't even make an attempt at passing him. It's Darlington off of turn two. You're mad because, you brushed the wall a little bit, which, yeah, he ran you up a little bit, but do it back. You don't have to destroy a race car doing it, in my opinion. I don't agree with tearing up race cars for that, in my opinion.
The biggest thing to me is never made an attempt to pass him.
That's like, what I'm saying.
Like, if you work a guy over and listen, I'm all about win at all costs. We've built this system around you've got to win a race. You've got to win a race to get in the playoffs, everything. He's on a, 40 race winless streak or something like that. Win at all costs.
Ain't
but
no more.
At least make some kind of attempt and realize maybe I can't get around him.
What
now
do they
I
show there
him.
Every time we go to Arlington? What replay do you see on that screen?
Ricky Craven, Kurt Busch.
Why? Because they were racing.
They were racing their asses off.
We could have seen that again.
We could have seen something like that. Or you, Joey is by far good enough to nudge somebody and get by him and do what he has to do.
He had a run, too. You could see it.
So you think that's a cheap shot?
I think it's a cheap shot.
Tommy, what do you think?
I do. I think that restart where they were battling coming off of two, I mean, that was a trouble area the whole race, that little bump with the cars bottoming out and doing what they needed to do, especially on low air. I think that was really, really hard racing. I think what Joey did to William wasn't. I'm with TJ. I think he had plenty of time to pass him. Obviously, he was 2/3 a lap faster than he was at that time. Byron was out of tires. He was holding on for dear life, and Joey could have made a race of it, but didn't. Just ran into the back of him, and it all goes back into how many people seen that, how many kids seen that, how to race, and a lot of kids are going to learn from that and say, hey, we're going to just push him out of the way and win the race instead of race the racetrack, race the driver at the same time. And like you said, that Craven Kurt Busch race was probably one of the most phenomenal finishes of all time of how they raced, the respect they gave, why they were wrecking each other was incredible.
Yeah. And I think those two guys look back at that race and probably have, respect each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think we could have had another one yesterday and the whole world would be talking about that and how great a race it was, even though it was a really good race, how great the race would have been. And if they did, and again, the drivers get to choose how good the race is going to be, right? And
a lot of times, yeah.
Right?
They're the performers.
Right? So that could have been another game changer for our sport. But now it's a little bit different.
I will say I agree with everything you guys are saying. You're missing one big point, and this is what I'm the most spot off on. Joey's lame-ass excuse after the race of, I will not be bullied. He ran me in the fence. If you're going to be and race like a D-bag, you got to own it. Don't play the victim on TV like I had to pay him back. He was bullying me. No, that's not the way that played out at all. So I'm the most spot off for the way he handled it in the post-race. Let's back up. Your experience as an owner, your experience as a crew chief, you are now William Byron's crew chief. Post-race, going into the rest of the season where you got one took from you, stole from you, cheap shot it from you. What do you guys talk about this week as it pertains to how you race Joey Logano from here on out? Is there payback? Is like what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, if I was him, I basically knew that I wasn't going to win. I mean, I if you can see it happening the last 3-4 laps, it wasn't.
He mowed him down.
But we would have finished second, right? So the game plan is to get him when it counts. Don't get him now. Get him when it counts the last 10 races. Just rough him up a little bit, ruin his day, just a little bit more than what he deserved. And it's open game now, unfortunately. But really, should it be? You know, are they sending the right message by doing that? I don't know, man. It's tough nowadays. You just back when in the 90s and early 2000s, none of these guys raced like this, man. I mean, Mark Martin set the example of respect. Jeff Burton learned from Mark Martin how to race. You used to watch these guys when they caught him to move over and let him go. You know why? Because they lost less time to the guys behind them. Now you see these guys racing each other to death. You know why? Because the way NASCAR set it up with the stage, the points, the what it's worth. What, you know, there's so much more on the line nowadays during the race, in the beginning to the end. And these guys have to race like this. I mean, everybody's getting mad at Ross Chastain and how he's racing. He's just racing hard. I mean, the guy's been giving everybody space for how many years now, getting out of everybody's way,
right,
and doing and respect what he needed to do, running from, you know, 22nd to 32nd for a lot of years. Now he has the capability of running up front, man. He's seen these guys drive past him, wrecking him because they're mad at him because he's lap car, you know. Don't you think he has in the back of his head who did what to him back in the day? So I respect the hard racing, but listen, man, understand if a guy catches you from a half a straightaway back, you got to let him go because the guys behind you are going to catch you fast if you got both of you guys start racing. It just doesn't make sense. And
especially with 230 laps to go.
Speaking of Ross Chastain, of all the guys in the top 10, as a car owner, you may disagree with me. I hope that Ross Chastain is on a one-year deal because he has to be the lowest paid guy in the top 10 in points right now. Two wins, locked into the playoff. This is a guy that could go have a life-changing contract. And he's underpaid based on how he's performing. It is every single week from the spotter stand. I look up there at the leaderboard, and he's in the top 7 or 8. It doesn't matter where we're at. If it's a road course, if it's a short track, if it's a Darlington, if it's a mile and a half, he's up there.
Yeah, but
does this fit his driving style? Like, is that the deal with the car?
The car does. It allows people like Ross to drive the heck out of these things. And, you know, I don't think these guys look at the money as much now. I mean, they're searching, they're trophy hunting. You know what I'm saying? And the scale of the pay, to be honest with you, has gone down a lot, in the last 5-6 years, just because of the sponsorship money coming in. I don't think he's underpaid. I think he's probably the lower tier of the best drivers out there.
He's enjoying what he's doing right now.
Are you seeing,
hands down,
on that note, are you seeing more contracts with bonus opportunities, such as if you get a top 10 or if you win? Is that something that's becoming more popular, such as for Ross Chastain?
Yeah, I think there's more and more, you know, if we make money, you make money now. Mm-hmm. The days are gone of the big contracts. And, you know, obviously I was in a lot of meetings with the charter stuff happening and, you know, sitting down with Mr. Hendrick and Roger and Richard and Jack. And, you know, I was in a lot of those high meetings and I understood why our sport got to where we got pretty quick on how it got too expensive. And, you know, these guys were just racing each other. These owners, all they've done the last 15 years is race each other to win races. And they built all these big places and hired all these people for all this money. And they ran themselves really pretty much out of the garage for the high cost of what we're doing. And I applaud NASCAR now for making these decisions to keep everybody in line. And it's hard because you want to win, but that's why you're seeing these different drivers and these different teams run up front now, because there's a lot of more even parts, a lot more even guys now involved in the sport. So it's pretty cool.
And a new car kind of cleans the
slate. That's what I'm saying. Everything, it's the same parts. Everyone has the same part numbers. Everyone has the same stuff. So that's why you're seeing a lot closer racing today than you did 4 or 5 years ago.
So when's TBR coming back?
No. But TBR's there. We're just having fun modified racing.
You're doing what you really like now.
Back to the Darlington drama. Contact between Martin Truex Jr. and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. off turn 2 causes a backstretch pileup after they ran 3 wide through turn 2. Spot on, spot off, Brett.
Tommy just alluded to this. I mean, those guys on those restarts were getting all they could get. We saw Ross Chastain wreck. We saw the Martin Truex wreck. We saw William and Joey racing each other very hard. I am spot on for any time you see these guys up on the wheel, taking control of the car. These cars are hard to drive again, and these guys have their hands full. I mean, they talk about it all the time. We only saw 23 cars finish the race yesterday at Darlington, and before the show, Tommy and I were talking about how many of those were on the lead lap. Like, it was absolutely insane. So anytime you see hard racing and it produce an entertaining race, I thought it was a great race yesterday at Darlington. I'm spot on for it.
Right. I'm spot off. I got collected in this mess. We were just that whole bottom line. We
must have done your job.
We all got wrecked. Yeah, I didn't.
I think all of Tommy probably texted me last
night. Yeah. Again, we are all in the same wreck with Denny, the boss. So he was, as he's wrecking, he's watching his two cars wreck, and I'm sure he was thrilled about it. Our car, I mean, we just, at 23-11, we can't catch a break lately. Like, we had speed yesterday. We were probably seventh, eighth place car. And then we get caught up in a mess. Kurt had miserable pit stops all day. He drove back to the top 10 every time. And he got caught in a mess. So, I mean, we're looking for a break over there. But like Brett said, you just, they were having a hard enough time going two wide off of turn two, let alone three wide. And it just looked like they all ran out of room. Kind of Martin drove up into Ricky and got turned, and we all just kind of piled in there from there. But, you know, like you said, like, everybody's getting all they can get. And two wide was hard enough off of turn two. Three wide wasn't going to work.
TJ.
I am spot off for seeing cars get tore up, because I absolutely hate when cars get tore up and see these guys hit the wall like they do. But I am spot on for the hard racing and the guys on the edge where they actually make some mistakes, and we got some excitement out of that. So, but I hate seeing the cars get tore up, but I like the excitement.
Bobby?
Am I getting paid for this spot on, spot off?
Yeah. It's $5 per episode.
Yep. Okay. It's, all right, it's cool. Five for spot on, 10 for spot
on. Yeah, I mean.
Then you definitely need a race.
I know.
$25 cover charge to get in the door, so you're kind of paying that back.
Yeah.
So, obviously, even during practice and during the beginning of the race, the drivers knew that area was the roughest spot for the cars, where they were bottoming out on that little bump, what was going on there. So, it's kind of, you know, it's, you're either going to go for it or you're not in the beginning, because that's where you're going to gain your most positions, right? Especially at Darlington, because once it evens out, the tires even out, it's hard to pass, right? It always has been. So they got to get what they can get. Three wide over there, that's kind of, you know, years ago, we were lucky we could get one car through there, you know, before they repaved it, you know? So that's a little crazy, but it's race. I mean, these guys, this is what they get paid to do. This, you know, unfortunately, it causes a wreck. You know, it took out a lot of really good race cars, but it happens.
Another topic on wrecking. Kyle Busch leaves his parked car on pit road at the garage entrance and walks off after getting collected in Brad Keselowski's wreck. Freddie.
So, old Kyle.
Would you like some M&Ms, Freddie?
Yeah.
Before Freddie answers, here's what I want to know, TJ. Why did you wreck to cause this? Why did you do this?
Yeah, something, either the right front blew or something broke in the right front.
So we had people on social media saying that Brad Keselowski is an idiot for wrecking. I didn't think it was Brad's fault. You're confirming it's not Brad's fault. Now we can address this and make it solely about Kyle Busch and not about Brad Keselowski.
Well, you're an idiot if you think Brad just drove into the fence on purpose.
I will be the first one on here. We are critical of Kyle Busch, obviously, and Kyle Busch has the ability to be a complete a**hole at times. And sometimes his... his attitude is very calculated. If you remember last year, he got fined $50,000 for driving through the cones and almost hitting a person as he pulled into the garage. So in his mind, this is what his response was to NASCAR. Where, as mad as he was at this point, he's still thinking back to last year where, you know what? They fined me for hitting those cones. They fined me for driving through the garage. I'm going to park this thing right here and I'm going to get out and you can come get it. And now if NASCAR does not hammer him for this, because we sat there next to each other and talked about it, we waited three or four laps to open pit road because Kyle Busch's car was sitting in the middle pit road. It was ridiculous how much time he disrupted the race. Now I know he was
sending his message.
Yeah, you were on your way home. but you know, I get it. Kyle Busch, but like, Mike Davis compared us to Kyle Busch in the NASCAR media world. But you need the Kyle Busch's of the world, because what the hell else are we going to talk about? And the fact that he went back to last year and remembered, they fined me 50 grand for driving through those cones. You know what? I'm not doing it this time. I'll park this son of a right here and I'll get out and you'd come get it.
So, Tommy, you're a team owner. What would you think about if you had Kyle as a driver in this moment?
Oh, this would not go well.
Well, I've said it before on my social media and I'll say it again. Kyle Busch is a little plain and simple. And
okay, this is okay.
You know, he is. I mean, if it wasn't for his talent, there would be no sponsor or no owner that would let him drive a race car. I think he is just so far off base on what he does, on how he does it. And all he did yesterday is disrupt the race, in my opinion. And he could have turned into that garage without a problem.
Spot on, spot off didn't pay well, but calling somebody a little gets you $100.
Brett, you're a little. Can I please have $100?
No, you can't call me a little. Doesn't work that way. I am.
What got into you?
I need money.
Here's what I told Freddie when this whole thing went down. They should take a NASCAR official and put him in that car. And if that car will crank and that car is able to drive through that gate into the garage, he should be fined 100 points because he ruined the entire part of the race as far as what we were doing for pitting. He ruined the commercial strategy. He changed everything because he was being exactly what Tommy just called him. I am spot off for his temper tantrum. This guy's he's the only current two-time champion in the series. No other driver out there has more championships than he does. Act like a freaking man. Act like a champion. He gets crap from people, and then he gets mad at people for getting crap from them. He asked for all this.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to applaud his brother on how he was and how he is today. And whoever fixed Kurt needs to go fix Kyle, because Kyle can still do what he does on the track and be a villain on the track and get in front of a TV camera or understand what he needs to do at the time to help our sport. He's not helping our sport by doing what he's doing. He's helping by people talking about it, but it's negative. It's all, in my opinion, it's negative.
I agree.
And okay, is that what NASCAR wants? It's negativity? No, I'd rather see somebody race hard and argue a little bit on that than disrupt what he did yesterday. But, you know, and that's him. It's always been him, and I just don't like it.
Like you talked about with the Joey Logano thing, I think everybody in this room can agree Kyle Busch is a top 3 to 5 talent our sport.
Top two, three.
I'll never not say he's one of the most talented race car drivers ever.
Ever.
But
what kind of example are you setting? His son is coming up. Brixton's coming up. What kind of example are you setting for kids that are watching you race that, you know, this is okay? Like what's Brixton, you know, what's Brixton watching his dad go, oh, he just gets out of the car. You know, it's just a terrible example for people that are watching our sport to, okay, this is okay to park your car in the middle of pit road and throw a temper tantrum right here.
You're bringing up a great point. Kevin Harvick actually said on the Dale Jr. Download, once he had his son,
Kevin Harvick's son started
racing, he was like, I can't be that guy anymore. I need to be a better role model for my son. But it's not only for your son. It's for all these young racers that are out there who want to be you when they grow up. There's no bigger brand in America that caters to all lifestyles than M&M's. And kids love that car. Don't act like it. It's not that hard.
What do you want to call him, TJ?
I agree. I'm not disagreeing with anything you guys say. I am going to go spot on for the content. I mean, we got some very insightfulness from Tommy here, which is going to work out great. There was only cones over. Oh, Kyle's here.
That'd be great. I wish he was.
So there was only cones in front of half of that entrance because we didn't even have a right front that would turn, and we drove around Kyle and threw the cones all the way to the truck. So,
100%, he was being facetious of what happened last year,
which is kind of genius. But
it's funny that he thought about that.
I'm saying. Like, but spot on for the content. Doing it that way. But
yeah, unfortunately, Brad's, I think, incident happened because of the beginning of the race, and something happened there that caused something to break. I'm probably
Well, we broke traction on lap two. That's for sure. Yeah. So from the backside. Yeah.
No, I mean from hitting, you know, and spinning out. Those cars are very temperamental on that.
We think the bodies are
tougher than
some.
The suspension parts.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest thing I want to take away from this weekend was we've talked about on here how strong the bodies are. We beat and bang at the Coliseum. We've gone everywhere, and you don't see any tire rubs anymore.
Yeah.
But we saw a lot this week where a guy, even Kyle, like. Never had that much. The contact wasn't that bad, but his car was wrecked. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like these guys are just brushing the wall now and breaking toe links in the back and or bending stuff so any shot to the wheel is gonna put these cars out of the race.
Don't have a good feel for the when they wreck and hit yet. But I've seen guys hit the wall, but they must have hit it flush because they go off. Like I saw the 51 get into one and got loose and hit the wall.
He got help.
But he got in the wall and I'm like, you didn't do it, did you?
No, it was Reddick. Reddick.
You had that look. He pounded the fence.
Yeah.
And then kept going. You know, and so I don't have a good feel for it yet, but
I watched Reddick. So
Uncle Barry's calling.
So
put him on speaker.
Reddick, Cody Ware actually had a very good day yesterday for Cody Ware Day.
I think he
finished top 20. Credit to them. They had a good day. And there was one point, and I think you were racing the two for the Lucky Dog, right?
Yep.
And Cody came in and put tires on that caution when you guys didn't, I think.
Yeah. And he should have taken a wave and been back on a lead lap instead of opting to stay one down and get tires and race anybody.
Yeah.
But yes.
But so he would put tires on and he was going to try to drive up there and get these guys. And we watched it. Brett's tapped me on the shoulder. He run Reddick in the fence off of turn two. He hit him in the left rear and Reddick just got behind him down the front stretch and never checked up. Like I saw the brakes locked up into one.
And on the unfortunate part about that is Cody, the last 2-3 weeks have gotten some situations and now it's given everybody the green light just to abuse the poor kid. And I think, you know, in my opinion, it all goes back to you guys up top. You know, that whoever's spotting for him needs to do a better job of communicating with his driver to get out of the way, to call what's happening way before it happens, and it's not getting done. So I think Cody's a decent race car driver.
He's gotten better.
I really do.
I think he's gotten better this year.
And again, Rick Ware's equipment is the same as everybody else. He's got really good people working on there, but there's a missing piece there that's causing some problems, in my opinion. And I have no idea who's spotting. I don't know who's there now all the time, but they need to do a better job communicating on what's going to happen before the situation. You guys know, you guys all the time. You got
big picture racing.
Yep. I remember when I was with Tommy, we had Michael in the car, and Tommy had been through this for years before I even got there. And this is kind of where I learned the fact of we don't want anybody to know we're on the racetrack. You know, we're gonna go out here, Freddie. We're gonna run. If we can run 25th today, that's a great day. You know what I mean? And that was the goal. Like you're going out there, out of the guy's way, race the guys you're racing, and that's what I got built into. And listen, we give Rick Ware Racing a lot of grief on here because of the fact that they're in the headlines every week, whether it's spinning out or getting into a Chase Elliott. But and the reason why I do that is because I came from TBR, and you can, this is going back to years past where Rick was, you know, their business model was okay, they're making money, you know, but Tommy figured out a way, and I talked about this on here. Tommy figured out a way to make money in the sport. And we were competitive. We weren't the slowest car on the racetrack every week. And that's what I went back to last year. Now, obviously, this year, they've stepped it up. And Cody's done a great job. You know, and, of course, we're going to pick on him because it's low-hanging fruit a lot of times. You know, you kind of put yourself in that position when you got a guy on there on the radio like you talked about a couple weeks ago saying, you know, Chase Elliott spun you out because he didn't have anything for you. Well, that's ridiculous. Don't say dumb shit. Don't put yourself in the headline. You know, obviously, unfortunately, last week.
What fired up Tyler the rest of the race?
Well, you know, like, but like, like that. Like, why are you running in the back of the 8 car? Like, well, just run your race.
Tyler, they went at it for 2-3 laps before he finally punted him. And that's where you got to concede the position. Let the 100%. 8 car go. And you're not going to catch Justin Haley and Austin Cindric anyway, even if you're on a little bit better tires. You got to have some common sense.
Like back to what Tommy talked about.
You got to have someone. And with that situation, with somebody like Cody and someone with Rick Ware Racing that has the knowledge up there to look way further ahead than they are right now. And then you earn the respect. All right. That's what I was always about, to earn the respect in the garage, to earn the respect on the racetrack. And yeah, I mean, like Freddie said, we weren't the slowest cars. I run on a 32nd of everybody else's budget. And I ran with guys that had way, way more money than I did. And I would leave on Sunday pretty happy on what I accomplished. Now, other people, the fans might not think that was accomplishment, but the amount of money I had, the amount of tires I had during the race, you know, the amount of crew members I had, who I had, I think we did good.
You mentioned respect too here. This is big. You had a lot of drivers get in your race cars that were accomplished drivers at various points in their careers because they respected you and they knew what you were out for. Yeah. And it helped you grow that, what you were trying to accomplish too.
Yeah, they did.
Another thing, all drivers need coaching in that position as well. Like we were right on one lap down, running right with the leaders there, trying to, you know, working for the lucky dog. Every driver can use the coaching from that point, you know, no matter what. I mean, you got to remember, you got to keep what your goal for that run is. And, you know, yeah, I wanted to go up there and pass Truex and Ross, but I knew that probably wasn't going to happen. So my goal, hey, Brad, just keep doing what you're doing right here. We're going to stay with him. We'll take advantage of what's given to us right here. Don't overdo it. And then, of course, we blow the tire. But it wasn't every driver can use that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and they showed, did a lot of audio yesterday with Coleman Presley talking with Logano on all the information that Coleman was giving Joey, and he was giving him incredible information, not about that time, but to think about later and when cars are around him. So I really think that helped Joey later on in the race. But your guy's job up there is more important today because of the competition level, how everybody is running so close together than it ever has been before. And I, you know, believe that's what's getting Cody in trouble. He's a good race car driver. He's got a really – Rick has stepped up that program. He has put so much money – I've been there. I've helped him with Ryan Preece do that L.A. Coliseum. I know what kind of equipment. The guys that are working for him are really, really smart.
He was competitive L.A.
Yeah.
He was very competitive L.A.
Yeah. They you know, they have some information coming from Stuart Haas, so they're not that far off. But they got to get one thing fixed, in my opinion, and I think that – the pressure is going to be off of everybody picking on Cody, because it's not Cody. Cody's in there trying to drive his butt off for his dad, for his sponsors, and everybody else.
He just needs to finish.
Well, he needs to have someone teach him how to finish. Okay.
Yeah, you got
to
finish, got to finish lead lap.
Yeah. So you're saying Coleman learned from Reddick.
Coleman Presley
learned from Reddick in the one for later in the race.
Yeah. Coleman learned from his dad and his uncle. That's who Coleman learned. Yeah. And his grandfather. That's who he learned from. Trust me.
We could probably talk about this for like five episodes, but Tommy, this next one's for you, especially as a team owner. Spot on, spot off. Chris Rice says, as a company, we're as bad as we've ever been. Give me about 3 months and hopefully we'll get it turned around. We've got one car running 30th during the Xfinity race at Darlington. What do you think?
I love Chris Rice's thought process on this, because he is the team leader, right? And he wants to get everybody better. He's in a position right now with growing, you know, with the Cup program, which had a really good day yesterday, the Xfinity program. And they want to win. That's what they're in the Xfinity Series for, is to win races and run up front. And to have a leader with that thought process and to go in now into meetings and talk about this to his crew members and his drivers on what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, I think is the proper way to do it. He needs to let everybody know that he's not happy and he wants better results. Yeah, two guys are up front, one guy's running. Well, why is that one guy? We have the same equipment. The driver's good. What's the problem? So I think he's spot on for saying that, to keep the momentum going on this program. Chris has been doing this a long time. He's a people person. He knows what to say. He knows how to get people motivated, and that's why he's in the position that he is.
Brett, spot on, spot off.
Spot on. Tommy's right. I mean, they literally came out as a company with a hashtag trophy hunting years ago, and that's what they built off of. They built that, to Tommy's point, around the Xfinity Series. They made a huge move a couple years ago when they went and got AJ Allmendinger. And it was to find out if their cars were good enough to win every single week. And obviously, AJ is now full-time. You've got Landon Castle over there running well, running a lot better than he's running the last several years. You got Daniel Hemric, last year's champion. College racing isn't going around and looking for kids with money. They're looking for ways to win races. And obviously, the Cup program is now down the street from them. That's got to probably take away a little bit of focus, because we're at a point in this industry, maybe, Tommy, for the first time that I can remember, where it's hard to get good people in certain areas right now. And I'm talking It can be truck drivers. It can be engineers, shop guys. Like, as an industry, we have somewhat of a people shortage. So the expansion probably took a little bit of focus away in terms of what Chris was able. Chris was, man, he's, I'll tell you right now, he is hands-on every single part of that business. Well, that business has grown a lot. So now Chris has got to get the right managers and people in place to be able to pick up some of those things that he doesn't have the time for. But nobody wants to win in the Xfinity Series more than Chris Rice. That's their bread and butter. That's where they came from. And he will be all hands on deck. He is in a little bit different position, and I'd love to hear Tommy's take on this. RCR is an alliance partner. They're helping him with a lot of technical things. RCR on Saturdays, they're not running great either, right? So is that what the problem is that Chris has got to work with Richard on for the next 3 months?
Are you asking my
opinion? Yeah.
So it is really, really hard to do what they do when they have an alliance, because Richard Childress has a business to run. Okay. Stuart Haas has a business to run. Rick Hendrick has a business to run. Joe Gibbs has a business to run. So when you think you're signing up for an alliance, there is no way you're getting all the information. I've tried, I've done it. I've sat there. I've lasted 2 weeks. Then I start shaking my head and I'm going, this is not the same stuff. This is not what it is. You can pay as much money as you want to try to get all the information, but unless they have somebody sitting there 24/7 running that simulation and doing all, which I'm sure they are now, that's the only way you're going to get the information. Now, with the simulation stuff, if you're one step off, you're going to be one step off on the track. It is that sensitive of what needs to be done. So everyone has to work hard. Like you said, it's up to Richard Childress and the Kala group to work together to make it better. And what's going to happen is once they make it better, both programs, all three programs, whoever's program they're helping is going to get better. But if you're not sitting in there and sleeping and eating and drinking and doing whatever with those people, and if you're not doing that and you're just relying on the information to get to you, you're a lost cause.
Trouble. Yeah. I mean, I felt like Chris is, I always like to call Chris Captain Positive. You know, he's Mr. Smile at everybody and everything else. I saw it for the first time at Dover last week. We were having dinner upstairs at the casino, and I saw Chris, and he was dejected about it. It was Saturday night after the Xfinity race, and you could tell in his eyes he was basically, I mean, I think he might even apologize to me and Brett, like, I'm sorry, we're going to get better. And he said it to Landon, yeah, we finished sixth on Saturday. And he said to Landon, we ran about 12th all race long, 10th, 12th, And he apologized to Len. He said, I'm sorry, I'll get this turned around. And where I think that comes from is Chris knows we've won races in the Xfinity Series of Colleague Racing. That box is checked. Now he wants to win a championship. And he knows right now we do not have the speed to run for a championship. And that's his long game. All three cars are going to make the playoffs. All three cars are going to be there. AJ ran in the Final Four last year. But Chris's game now is, I want to win a damn championship for Matt Colleague. And he knows right now our cars are simply not capable of doing that. And like Brett said, the RCR cars are in the same boat as us. The 2 and 21 show speed at times, but they're not consistently fast. JRM is kicking our ass right now, essentially. And they're kicking our ass on pit road. They're kicking our ass on the racetrack. They got their shit together right now. And we got to make a big step to catch up to them.
I was running in front of you, too. So.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, we have to get better. If we're Landon, you know, and it's weird, in a weird situation for Landon, because Landon's ecstatic. You know what I mean? Like, not, I shouldn't say ecstatic, but from what he's been driving for the last 10 years to what he's got now, he's like, this is a load better than what I've been doing in the past. But still, you know, now Chris knows what we're capable of, and he wants to make that next step to be all, he wants all three cars to be championship contenders.
Well, if Landon's settled like that, that's part of the problem.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's not. He's not. Yeah. You know, but I'm just saying, like, in his mind, it's like he doesn't think he's not at the same level of panic as Chris. Like, you know, Landon's like, I'm running top 10 where I was, you know, 15th, 20th last year. I'm making a big step, and Chris is like ready to jump off a bridge. You know, and it's like you're trying to meet that in the middle where Landon's like, I'm happy, but yeah, obviously he wants more.
I mean, a year ago, all three guys win. You win the regular season championship. You put a guy in the Final Four. We're struggling. Chris is frustrated. I love it. I love that he's coming out publicly, because you're also kind of taking the head coach mentality in football. I'm challenging my guys in public.
Will you stop talking so I can do my point? Because you're taking my points.
I mean, this has been the longest show ever.
Wait. Do you have a sponsor mention or something? Yeah.
I mean, apparently Brett gets all of our time. That's exactly what I was going to say. That Chris, he's giving a halftime speech right here. He's pumping the guys up, which is good because them guys want to go, and you want to. He's digging. and that's what you want to go and work with. So
100%. Like when I worked for Tommy, it was, and he touched on this earlier, like we would run 20th maybe or something like that. And all right, you know, we're thinking, it is what it is. We ran 20th. And Tommy's like, no, look who's behind us. Look who we beat. Like, look at the steps we're taking here. And then he would pump everybody up. And obviously, he still wanted to be better. We wanted to win, obviously. But, like, you also take into consideration who the hell you're racing against. Denny, if you look at that Netflix documentary we did, Denny was the same way with us. Like, listen, guys, these results suck. Like, you guys got to figure this shit out because we can't run 15th every week and stay in business. I need you guys to be better. And he held it, you know, he held the candle to us like, hey, you guys got to step this shit up. And that's what Chris is doing right now.
Switching gears to another hot topic for the weekend, the Formula One race. The entire Miami Grand Prix facility was wired with 5G so fans can stream F1 TV on their phones during the race through a Verizon partnership. Brett, spot on, spot off.
Spot on. I'm a big advocate of the people that are on the grounds being able to promote how great the event is. It encourages people to come out. It encourages that younger demographic to come out. I mean, we know how much the F1 is growing in America with that 18 to 40 year old. Well, guess what? If your phone's not working, those 18 to 40 year olds aren't coming. So I'm spot on. I think this is a shot across the bow in the NASCAR world to every track owner, promoter, operator. You got to get cell service in your facility. We're not fortunate enough to be able to race in major cities all the time. And when you go to the majority of these major athletic facilities, they're in cities that have a lot of infrastructure, a lot of support. We race in BFE a lot. I mean, when you talk about racing at Concord, New Hampshire, there ain't nothing within 50 miles of that place in terms of a city, right? So we've got to invest and give our fans. Our phones worked great yesterday, right up until about 2 hours before the race. And Freddie and I and TJ, we were all parked beside of each other. And it's like, well, we just got too busy around here for our phones to work. So I am all in for a venue making this investment to change the fan experience.
Yeah, I mean, Brett's talked about this on here forever, and me and him have talked about it forever. Like, one of your biggest advertising tools is the people at the racetrack. And if they can't share their videos, or they can't – we're talking about, you know, they paid Blake Shelton a bunch of money to come to a race earlier this year. Like,
All-Star race, 2 weeks.
Yeah, nobody knows he's there because – you can't share a video of the guy on the stage because your phone doesn't work. I had people come to me last week or 2 weeks ago and say they wanted to listen. You know, they didn't rent a scanner from Racing Electronics, but they wanted to listen to the NASCAR app. Couldn't do it because their phone doesn't work. You know, I don't understand how in this day and age we can be at this position where, I mean, Brett just got a brand new phone. He tweeted out this week that he's got whatever, 27G or something like that. Still don't work at the racetrack. I don't understand in this day and age how that's possible.
Yeah, I'm spot on for that as well. You know, when you're sitting there looking at another event, you're just consuming the content that people are putting out from there. You know, you're looking at who's doing things and what they're doing there. You're just constantly consuming that. But if that's not out there, you're not taking it in. So I do agree with the better the service, the demographic definitely fits. These people want to put it on Instagram, whatever social media stuff they got. I definitely think it's a necessity in today.
Go ahead, Tom. Just burn them down again. Why don't you?
Do you even know what the internet is?
he does because I get texts. Usually if my phone is working, you're going to text mid-race from Tommy about anything.
See, it's working. So you guys are full of
We got Wi-Fi on the roof now. NASCAR hooked us up.
I'm going to have to get another part-time job.
It's really nice, too. Yeah. I mean, it's awesome.
I mean, the F1 coming to Miami was, I think, a huge hit. They have a lot of worldwide companies that follow them, a lot of worldwide celebrities and people. I think it's easier for where they go, the demographics on how they do it, to set all this up. I think they have a bigger show than a race, where we have a little bit smaller show, but a better race. I think, if there was more worldwide companies that would come in and want to do it, then NASCAR would do it for sure. It's kind of hard to do it, like Brett said, to come to New Hampshire and put a whole system in place, but there's got to be something that they can do that's a traveling. They do everything else that's traveling, right? There's got to be something else that they can develop to travel to get all that infrastructure in all these racetracks so the next demographic of kids and people can come into our sport because that's what they're always looking for.
What do you see on the back of phones with kids nowadays? That loophole. Because it doesn't leave their hands. No. And if it's not working, they're not happy.
And we talked about this yesterday, Brett. When Sprint was the title sponsor, Sprint phones worked there because they brought in some kind of infrastructure to make sure their phones worked.
The equipment's there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still out there.
It's an investment.
Yeah. But, do I say spot on?
Spot on for we need it.
Spot on.
We need it. Yeah.
Hey, Door Bumper Clear fans, this is Mike Davis with Dirty Mo Media, and I want to give you five reasons why RacingUSA.com is our favorite store for NASCAR merchandise. First, NASCAR fans have rated RacingUSA.com Google's top source for NASCAR merchandise, so you can always buy with confidence. Second, RacingUSA.com automatically discounts every order in your cart, so you always get the best price. Third, RacingUSA.com guarantees the lowest pre-order prices, so you do not have to shop around for a better price. Fourth, RacingUSA.com ships all in-stock orders the next business day, so you can get your order faster than anyone else in the industry. And fifth, RacingUSA.com has a wide selection of current season hats, apparel, diecast, and novelties for the sport's most popular drivers. You can find products that are not available elsewhere, like the exclusive Door Bumper Clear Justin Allgaier autographed diecast that sold out in less than 2 weeks. Fans, RacingUSA.com is Door Bumper Clear's choice for NASCAR merchandise, and we want it to be yours as well. So whenever you need a new hat, t-shirt, diecast, helmet, or novelty to show your support for your favorite driver, we want you to shop at RacingUSA.com, where you are always somebody special.
Engine number 9.
I tell you, if they don't hurry up and fix this track, I'm going to run out of beer and cigarettes.
Okay, so TJ, look at the date all the time. Let me tell you this date.
Hey, Freddie, just letting you know, we got the beige GMC out in the parking lot in case you want to have Bubba come out and hit us. Like you said, everything out on the track, so.
Hey now, Jason, got a message for you. Get out of Dillner's ass.
Reaction Theater starts now.
What a race we got at Darlington, and man, what a finish. People whine and moan all day long about, oh, the race is boring, oh, there's no personalities. Then all they want to do is complain when something happens. I mean, hey, exciting finish, got to enjoy it. And Brett Griffin, how about a top five finish? I see you, big dog.
I was driving home. I had to call Brett. I was like, what? How the hell did you pull that off?
Hate him. Spot on.
Spot on.
Joey, you just won at Darlington. How do you feel?
Well, just to let you know, if you ever put me in the wall, you're not going to finish the race. That's how I roll.
Oh, okay, cool. Anything else, Joey?
Well, yeah, it's just so cool. If you want to be like me, kids, one day, all you have to do is keep driving like you're in a Legends car, like my paint scheme. Just run into everybody, and you'll be great. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
Big Logano fan.
That's not even that bad.
No, this is very tame so far. Yeah. But Tommy can agree with this. That's what legend car racing is. Like legend car racing, I have not seen a race. I almost went the other night because Tommy's kids are running at Florence Speedway, and unfortunately it started raining, so I didn't go. But these guys rarely make the advertised lap distance because the kids these days just run each other over all the time.
And that's what I get so angry about. It's just, you know, it falls on the parents and it falls on the people that are running those cars for them. And it also falls on the race director. They got to do a better job of teaching these kids on how to race because it's not going to get any better. For us to spend all this money and time and race 12 laps or 10 laps, it just takes all the fun out of it, and it will go away.
Yeah, 100%.
It will fall into a negative thing, and it will go away if somebody's not paying attention. And I will never let my kids race like that. I will pull them off the racetrack, and that car will sit until they learn how to race. And, you know, Luke had an issue the other night. It was first time ever in a race car, and he did really good, qualified seventh, and he didn't see a guy going underneath him, and he clipped him, and Luke spun out, and he got out of the race. I said, no, Luke, he was under you. He gave you a chance in turn one, and he let off. In turn three, he didn't, and he was on he was at your left rear. No, it wasn't. But he looked in the video, right? And he's like, oh, you're right, you know? So, but these kids, the summer shootout is, even in the Winter Nationals this past year in February at Citrus, I think, it was just as bad. He's just, these kids, and again, they watch Joey, right? They watch Kyle and how he acts.
It makes it okay.
And they think it's okay, and it's not. These kids got to learn how to pass to become race car drivers. There's only a certain percentage of them that their parents are going to have enough money to get them through the sport, and the other kid's going to have to do it on their ability to get as far as they can. And if they're just doing it for fun to wreck people, it's not going to work.
You know, I'm not going to lie. William Byron passed up a perfect opportunity for himself to prove to everybody that he's got a personality and show people not to mess with him. All he had to do was go out there whenever Logano was doing his little Fox interview or whatever, even after, if you want to be a little bit professional and catch it on camera, and go out there and start talking to him. Make sure you got your helmet off if you're going to fight him. But, you know, I mean, I don't think he would have won a fight if they fought, but that was me. Open up a can of whoop ass.
This guy wanted to beat Joey's ass last night.
Nobody's been swung at in our sport more than Joey Logano. Yeah. He's been swung at by 10 or 12 drivers, but nobody ever pays him back on the track.
Oh, Sam's catching him.
I think Kenseth paid him back, didn't he?
Yeah, Kenseth got him. Oh, okay. You know,
Kenseth paid him.
There was
back.
A close vote a couple years ago about most punchable face, and it was Brett and Joey were a toss
tied.
Up. They're tied.
This guy's
I might
vote
be
just
the person
broken.
To change that.
Not a Joey Logano fan, but don't know what's dumber.
Is that Chloe?
William Byron not knowing that putting Logano up against the wall on that restart, that if he didn't get back to him, he wasn't going to take him out? Or Fox not realizing that that was going to happen? Like, they were totally oblivious to the fact that he pushed him up against the wall on that restart. Explain that to me.
I guess Fox didn't really show it, recap it.
I didn't.
According to social media.
It was just hard racing. It wasn't like he ran into the fence.
Nah.
I'll tell you what pissed him off is he had to lift. He lifted. He freaked out. I mean, I don't. William ran him up. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. He had to crack the
throttle. I don't think he did it intentionally. I think they
was just driving hard.
It's turned to a Darlington going for the win. Yeah. Joey would have done the same thing. Yeah. I would expect him to.
Joey would have did it in turn one. Okay.
Entry.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just. That's just hard racing, and you got to accept that.
There's hard racing and just driving through somebody. Yeah.
Hey, Fox, way to have Bill Elliott at the beginning of the show and in the last stage. They ask him questions about a race car driver. Who do you think he's going to root for? Who do you think he picked on the ones to watch? Number 9. That's right. He has nothing bad to say. Just like you said, Brett, this shouldn't be happening. Next week, why don't we put Brexton Bush in there? That way he doesn't know any better but to root for his dad.
I saw this.
$1 million bill.
I thought this was interesting because I went back and watched a replay of our wreck when I got home last night, and Bill must have been on the broadcast for that. And the only part about the wreck he broke down was the fact that Kurt running the back of the 9. He's like, oh, look at Kurt. You know, Kurt kind of got in the back of the 9 right there. There's 47 cars wrecking on the bottom. He's like, damn, the 45 hit the back of the 9 pretty hard.
I can promise you, the front of that 9 found something earlier in the race, too.
Oh, yeah.
I promise you that.
Yeah. Are you saying that he's the one that hit you?
He is the one that hit us.
He run through the back of you. Somebody did Denny get in the fence or something?
Yes, Denny got in the fence off too. They all checked up and the 9 put
not
him
all.
To 6.
Yeah.
But 9 didn't check up.
But in Bill's defense, in the beginning of the show, they were talking about future Hall of Famers. And he didn't mention his son. He mentioned Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bill, obviously, if it was your son out there, you'd be talking about your son
absolutely.
Too. But, you know, Bill Elliott's the man. He always will be the man. He's one of the men who made this sport.
Yes.
And he can talk about whatever he wants. I don't give a crap what he talks about.
Not how long he talks.
Richard Petty himself, it don't matter what they talk about. It's entertaining.
Yeah, they're right. They're always right.
Imagine Brett Griffin being the only one out of you guys beating Cody Ware. Go Cody Ware. He's the man. Y'all had nothing for Cody. They did it for Cody. You.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Hey, he had a good day yesterday. You can't not, like, we give him a lot of shit on here about, you know, how they run and stuff. But when, like, the day like yesterday where he just survives the race, and he could do that on a weekly basis. You know, maybe he's not going to run top 20 every week, but if you just stay, you know, run your race, stay out of the way, stay out of the damn headlines. Don't try to get too much when you're running.
Admit
30th.
That Cody outrun you yesterday. Just say it. Cody outrun Bubba Wallace.
He did outrun us. We were parked in the garage and he beat us. I'm glad for him.
Don't matter. He beat you.
That's the most underrated voicemail we've ever had left right there. I love it.
You would say that.
DBC Brit is always right. DBC TJ sucks all right. DBC kissing Denny's ass. DBC, you know that's Freddie Krass.
That guy's good.
Oh. That's AC/DC lead singer right there. I think that was him.
Pretty much spot on.
He was very accurate the whole time.
We do got a guy that calls in a lot and leaves songs. He's actually pretty talented. His name's Jeb. He does a really good.
My sister thought it was Jeb Burton up until last week.
Are you me?
No, and I didn't know. Claudia actually came to me. She's like, "Is that Jeb Burton that calls in every week and sings?" And I'm like, "No, it's not Jeb Burton." She goes, "Oh, your sister, she thinks it's Jeb Burton, and he's so talented." I said, "Nothing like Jeb Burton." But anyway, people, that is not Jeb Burton that calls in here every week.
Oh, this was a good one. So to leave an audio message 24/7, go to anchor.fm/doorbubberclear and click the message icon. Definitely send us some reaction through their message as you watch the show too this week. We'll keep playing the best ones each week on the show.
Offer pad question of the week.
What was the biggest determining factor when deciding to buy your current home? Tommy, what do you think?
Tommy built his. What was your biggest thing you had to have in there?
An entertainment room, just to be able to relax.
Oh, RPG room.
Yeah, Beth has her nice kitchen, and I have my nice little room to relax. And it was a must.
Tommy's got a really good outdoor kitchen too. Like, your little outdoor area is awesome. Like, we could sit there and just drink all day if we had to.
We've
done it before.
Brett.
Like Tommy, I need my space. And I've always done like a hybrid, like a man cave and office in one room. And that is definitely when I look to purchase a new home. I got to have my spot to kind of get away, seclude myself from the craziness, and be able to chill out.
DJ.
I would say similar, just rooms, because if you don't have enough rooms, you're bringing more people closer and you don't have your space to do things. So I would, you know, it's nice to have your office, like what Brett says, and then a place to chill out as well. So just rooms in general to separate things out.
Yeah. We were shopping for a house 3 or 4 years ago, and we ended up building one just for the fact that it was easier. Like, and Megan got to pick everything out, so that was a lot easier for me. But the one thing I did want to touch on, I heard a rumor this week that the groundwork has been laid down
for
Brett to get a pool.
What? I hadn't heard that.
I heard you told me this.
Oh, that ain't groundwork. That's like a fiction book.
Oh, boy. I heard we're getting a pool at the Griffin House. I'm going to roll up in there like Caddyshack.
Is it going to be painted on like the Formula One?
Yeah, that's what it's going to look like. We're going to spray paint the grass blue.
It's
going to
be a concrete slab with a vinyl pool.
Oh, man.
Go get a cash offer on your home today with our presenting sponsor, OfferPad.com. Time for us to get to our favorite Xfinity XFi More Than Fast moments from the week. Whether you're behind the wheel or online, speed isn't the only thing you need. So, what were your favorite More Than Fast moments this week, TJ?
My Xfinity XFi More Than Fast moment, I gotta go with Tyler Reddick. I know this is unsung here, but he was in the back and made his way all the way to the lead and was actually, if the cars had fallen right, was in position to possibly pull out a win if the things fell right for him at the end. So I'm going to give it to Tyler Reddick for fighting through the whole Darlington race, keeping his head up, moving what he had to at times and getting there.
If you're going to give it to Tyler, you got to give it to Randall, because Randall was the one that made the call. They were going to do a two-stop strategy. They short pit and got a bunch of track position. And,
but it takes the driver to be bought in as well. So, but, yeah, the team in general.
Team in general, because they short pit and got a caution when they needed it and cycled them to the lead.
But they had to do that because the strategy earlier in the race got them lapped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they had to do that to kind of dig back out of that hole, which to your point is spot on for that crew chief, because he did adapt and change his plan based on what he saw playing out.
My turn?
Yes.
So I'll break it up into two parts here. I think you got to hand it to some of the pit crews yesterday who did an incredible job of picking their teams up four or five spots at a time. And I think the guy who ran the smartest race out of everybody up until that backstretch wreck was Denny Hamlin. I think he was the most patient driver of getting to a point and waiting to the next thing to happen, such as a caution and a pit stop, to get to the next point to put him in a position. And I think that's why he's done so well there. I mean, I haven't watched many races on TV because I was at the races for the last 25 years, but watching him how that team raced yesterday was pretty cool, because you can see him get to a point and wait. And he didn't rush. He didn't push the envelope on anything they did yesterday. And they kept gradually moving up until they got to that point. And unfortunately,
he pushed the envelope.
Yeah, then he pushed the envelope. But, you know, it happens.
But then he never messes
even
up.
Even Tommy knows Denny's great.
Very methodical, Denny Hamlin. My Xfinity X5, more than fast
moment. I just said for that race.
Yeah. For that race.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't
I say he's great all the time. I have to. He signs
365
my check.
Days a year.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Shoot, I didn't even know that. I didn't even think about that.
My more than fast moment is how fast Kyle Busch left his car for valet parking at Darlington Raceway over the weekend.
Good thing you left the
keys
in it.
Too bad there's no valet.
He left the keys in it, at least.
Yeah, everything.
My Xfinity X5 more than fast moment, I wish this guy would have done this last week, but he did it this week. Justin Allgaier was super fast on Saturday. Started in the back. They had a battery issue before the race started. He had to check it up, change battery, get back out there, start last, drove to the lead. I think Noah was probably the best car on Saturday, but Justin took advantage of the situation, got out front, and took the win down.
Hey, one thing I don't think we talk about that they've fixed is after the second race of the year, we were pretty much all pretty down on getting these cars off the racetrack and stuff. And they've done a very good job. They picked that 18 up in about 30 seconds when they got to him, and he was gone.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So, but they've made a lot of adjustments.
The secondary Xfinity X5 more than fast
so
moment
your
is
record
now
drivers,
towing.
Towing
record driver, the tower drivers.
TJ's towing service.
Did they start cheering when they were hooking 18 up? I thought they did.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Do you think they started cheering? Yeah, of course they did.
Here on Door Bumper Clear, being more than fast is a way of life. Thankfully, there's plenty of weekly action for our Xfinity X5 more than fast moments.
You know what else is more than fast? Xfinity X5. With a speed for all your devices, you also get the reliability and security that keeps your crew connected and protected.
With Xfinity X5, you can do more of what you love with faster internet and a powerful and secure connection.
Follow at Xfinity Racing on Twitter for even more Xfinity X5 more than fast moments. And don't forget to vote for your favorites.
Thank you to Xfinity, proud premier partner of NASCAR.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Freddie and I have launched a brand new lifestyles racing brand called Couch Racer. The website is couchracershop.com. Again, couchracershop.com. And we're going to share a code with you guys at the end of this to get you something for free.
Man, essentially, when we are not at the racetrack, we are couch racing. We're at home watching the race. We're the football version of Monday morning quarterback. You know, this is what we do for a living. And when we're not doing it for a living, we are telling everybody how much smarter we are than they are at home.
That's exactly right. And I mean, even on Door Bumper Clear, we're essentially couch racing around here. We're sitting around basing and taking all of the knowledge that we have about this sport and telling you guys about what happened at the track.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of fun with it. Obviously, we have some new offerings. We have a lot of merchandise at couchracershop.com. You go on, get your spot on hat. We've got our couch racer character. We've now just dropped our Air Freddy t-shirt, which we got a really cool offer coming up on with a proof of purchase. We'll enter you instantly to get this cool offering.
Yeah, the current designs are awesome. We got more designs coming. I think you guys are going to love what's coming this summer. We've got some patriotic schemes and a few things to help you support your favorite things in and around NASCAR.
Chances are, if you are a fan of DBC, you are already a couch racer. So drop by couchracershop.com right now and show off the fact that you're a couch racer.
And here's the thing. We're going to give you a code right now. It's a simple code. DBC. If you enter DBC at checkout for any purchase that you make on CouchRacerShop.com, you're going to get a free OfferPad Racing t-shirt. And we've got another promotion. If you have already purchased or do purchase an Air Freddy t-shirt between now and the end of the week, you're going to be entered into a sweepstakes to win Freddie an autographed Bubba Wallace crew shirt. You can't buy these things.
This is my personal crew shirt that Bubba Wallace signed himself. I had him do it last week. You cannot, this is not something you could ever purchase. So drop in right now, buy yourself an Air Freddie t-shirt. You're automatically entered, and we're going to draw a winner within the next week or so. And you can't miss on this deal.
Yeah, any Air Freddie shirt bought between now and May 15th guarantees you a chance to win this Bubba Wallace crew jersey. In addition to us offering fun lifestyle brand apparel, talking about racing all the time, we're also giving back to the fans. We got cool experiences we've been able to give away, VIP garage passes, tickets to the races. We got way more things coming. So autographed Jeff Gordon visor was given away earlier. Make sure you check out CouchRacerShop.com.
What an idiot.
Let's get into the What an Idiot Award for the week. Brett.
I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go with probably the obvious, the dumb ass that threw the full beer can over the fence during the Jamie Little and John Hunter Nemechek winning interview. This person was pointed out by a NASCAR official. They were grabbed by a state trooper, and I pray that they arrested this because that is a whole nother level of stupid.
Somebody told me, I seen a tweet the other day that said, somebody, I hope they got carried off to jail. I said, I hope he got carried off to the hospital. I hope they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Because that's what he deserved. I mean, you've got Jamie down there. You've got not only Jamie and John Hunter, neither one of them have any kind of, you know, protection from a, you've got cameramen, you've got a producer, I'm sure, down there. This is just, I mean, if that thing is 3 feet to the left, somebody's hurt real bad right now.
Stitches are involved. Yeah. Staples are involved. I mean, concussions are maybe involved.
That's not even what an idiot. That is, I'm sorry, Jason, that is what a piece of like that is. There's no place for your in this sport for you if you're going to be the guy that throws stuff at a driver in victory lane.
That's his name, Jason?
That's Jason. Jason. That kid over there is Ben, but that's what TJ calls that kid.
That kid. What's his name?
That kid there.
We got to come up with a better nickname. Yeah. For him.
Look at his screen.
The king of nicknames.
What'd you call Doug?
Well, can't say it. We're on TV now.
Look at his screen. You might start calling him.
I forgot
him
to mention before, his grandmother even calls him.
Oh, yeah. Everybody.
The whole family calls him that. That's his nickname.
Good job, Tommy.
Yeah. You got one, TJ? What do you got?
Yeah, so I got to go. I did on the radio in the truck race call one of the other drivers an idiot because
there's a lot of drivers in that series you can call an idiot.
We're going into three. This guy's probably maybe just getting ready to dive inside, and this one truck spins out middle of three and four, sitting broadside, pretty much all, like right in the middle groove, like maybe one or two lanes above it. This dude throttles up. We're slowing down because I'm like wrecking in front of you, sitting in the middle of the track. This dude just stays in it and almost hits the truck in the middle of the racetrack and almost rips our left side off doing it. And then as we get lined back up, just wants to stay in front of us, ride side by side, like he's got the position on us. Now there is a truck sitting in the middle of the racetrack and the yellow flag is out. Where are you going? So
yeah,
that's it. You're not even saying any names.
I can't remember.
Say his name.
I don't know who it was.
Number. That's.
I think it was the 30.
The 30. That was Tate Fogelman.
Okay. There he is.
So, Tom, you got anybody you want to call?
You're not even going to say a name, TJ. Like you're calling him. You got to give us something.
Yeah, get to 30.
Who are you spotting for in the trucks?
Haley.
Oh, that poor. No, she cannot get a break.
No, I know.
All right, she is way more capable of finishing.
Oh, I know.
Way better than she has been. She cannot get a break.
And the people that she's racing around race like the Legends cars.
That's why she's got to get to the next. You got to help her there.
That's your job. Listen.
Hey, the good news is, I think next week, right?
I don't know.
Haley?
Oh, yep.
We're gonna bring Haley on here.
Sorry, you're getting replaced.
Tommy, next week you're replaced by Haley Deegan, who's much more.
You could have said that at the end of the show.
Did she agree to that money?
Yeah, yeah. She took the deal. But yeah, I talked to the TJ about this.
I got a spot on T-shirt.
Finally, won't be the only girl on the show. So, looking forward to that.
But my, before we get to Tommy, because there's no telling, he's probably gonna call me an idiot. But my wooden idiot of the week goes to Anthony Alfredo because
he
needs to stay off of Twitter, apparently, because, you know, he was in front of us. We were running like 10th and 11th, maybe coming down pit road late in a race. And some people maybe are not so familiar. You can run a couple extra lights the first half of the first quarter of pit road. It's a curve. So you can run a little bit faster on that curve and make up time. So we had bumped it up, I don't know, two or three red lights, and we were running faster through the first six sections. And yes, Anthony was in front of us, and he wasn't, and we were pushing him. But we didn't get a speeding penalty, and he didn't get a speeding penalty in that section. So whatever happens, late in the race, like the next thing I know on Twitter, he's, well, you know, what a big brain move on Landon Castle's part. He pushed me all the way down pit road, got me a speeding penalty, and locked the brakes up as soon as we got to a timing line. I was like, Landon, if you know where the timing lines are on pit road, let me know, because that makes my job a lot easier. If you know exactly where they're at, because I don't have to do anything on pit road now. But we went back and looked at it, and we pushed him sections one through six. Fully admit,
early,
we pushed him sections one through six, and he sped in section 14. He's blaming it on Landon. Landon pushed me the whole way down pit road. He did a video about it. He did a tweet about it. And Landon's like, yeah, but I don't know what to tell you. I did push you in sections one through six, but you sped in 14 where I was nowhere near you. So, like, let's back it down a little bit here. So you made your own mistake. Don't blame it other people. And that's my wooden idiot for the week.
Not only did he make that mistake, but
then he was running people over.
He ran into us off of two, and we thought we had a left rear flat. And then he cleaned out. Was it the 07 or 08?
08. One of them, yeah.
One of them. Joe Graff, whatever Joe Graff
07.
Was.
07.
07.
He clobbered him.
And Joe Graff doesn't need help wrecking.
So is that a team car to the other? Is that a car by itself?
02, 23, 27 or
The one Anthony's in.
Anthony's a team, is an hour car.
Yeah. 23, 27, 02.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not 08.
But
we're 10 races.
No, I know
in,
that,
TJ.
But I'm just saying. No, I'm not. I was wondering if he. I didn't know if that was a Sam Hunt car.
I wonder why Haley's wrecking all the time.
We got two spotters being fired on the show.
I thought he might have been teammates with the guy running up near the front. So,
Tommy, do you have one?
You got any idiots this week?
Yeah, what'd you see on the broadcast?
How much time? I got a quick story. So, I was driving. I was had my truck, my dually, on my way to Florence on Friday, and Josh Riomi.
Riom,
good. He's a good kid, man. The kid tries so hard. I work with him with the 27 car with Jacques Villeneuve. He calls me. I know he's right next to me. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "All right, man. You know who's driving your truck tonight?" You know. He's like, "Well, I'm driving one, and I forget who was the other one. I was driving the other one." I said, "All right, man. You know, keep it out of the wall, stay clean." He goes, "What usually happens is stage one, my other truck wrecks." And then I have to run in the back and, you know, keep it clean the rest of the race. I'm like, all right, man, well, good luck. Well, I turn the TV on. The first thing I see is his truck running into him and taking them both out running for last. And I'm like, well, that didn't work out so well. So whoever was driving those trucks and doing what they do.
I felt bad for Josh earlier this year. Where were we at? Where'd they wreck? Is Atlanta? Where they wrecked the hauler?
Oh, yeah.
So it's good. During the Xfinity race, they wrecked the hauler. Tony Raines was spotting for him, and Josh was in the Xfinity race, and Josh wrecks.
Josh wasn't driving it.
Somebody else. But yeah. I'm saying Josh was driving the Xfinity car at the time, and the hauler wrecks during the Xfinity race. So Tony Raines, Josh wrecks now in the Xfinity race, and Raines is like, I don't have the heart to tell him, like, your car don't look half as bad as your hauler does on the back straightaway. Like, oh, my God.
Poor
what a
Josh,
bad day.
Man.
That tunnel gets one every three, 4 years.
Yeah,
every new truck driver just wants
to
get
it. Who was driving his other truck? Was it the Hickory guy?
No, Ogata? I don't think.
Yeah,
was that
yeah.
it? Was
yeah,
it
he
him?
Just won his
yeah.
third race
he just
in a row.
Won a Hickory, yeah.
Get the hell out of the way, Josh. Yeah. Give him some room. Yeah.
I was like, poor Josh.
The guy got so mad he went whipped up on him at Hickory.
Hey, what's up, DBC fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let us explain.
Well, first of all, Freddie, the best part is it's free. There's nothing better than using a free, awesome service.
To make the process simple and easy, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer.
Anchor helps people find your show by distributing the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more platforms.
Also, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership.
I like money.
It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place.
We love using Anchor. It's a great platform that lets us hear from the fans in Reaction Theater with Anchor's Leave a Message feature.
So when you create your account with Anchor, you can also utilize their feature and make your own podcast. TJ will be your first guest.
So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's ANCHOR.FM to get started.
All right, moving on to DBC picks. Brett, congratulations.
You won
with Reddick. So you have,
I picked last and won. That's how bad you guys suck.
Whatever. Damn. You are now leading with 4 wins compared to...
I finished 4th.
I'm gonna give y'all an opportunity to have some expert advice from my good friend Tommy Ballin. Tommy, going into Kansas Speedway, a 1.5-mile racetrack, which manufacturer, which teams do you see having an edge?
Because Jason pick and then tell me.
These 4 people need your help. Well, not so much Jason, but the other 3.
It is clear right now that Chevrolet has an aerodynamic advantage of what is going on right now. And it's on the unfortunate part, it's not their fault. It's not anybody's fault, but what happens is the rule changes that have been made since the bodies have been wind tunneled and tested and everybody's been even. There's been some changes to the cars that have somehow affected the bodies, the 3 manufacturers, a little bit differently. So Chevrolet definitely has an advantage in my opinion right now. Obviously NASCAR, I think, is working on that for the future, probably for next year. But the things that they've had to do to fix some of the things, I think Chevrolet, looking at it, has the advantage. So I would go with a Chevrolet team if I was somebody.
So with that said, are they going to have the advantage through the rest of the year at these 1.5 miles, these big tracks?
I think it's forcing everybody to work really hard right now. And I think if they work just as hard as everybody else is trying to catch up to them, I think they will, yeah.
So, Jason, go first. You got an advantage now. I know you got your pick.
He's going to take a Toyota.
William Byron.
Oh,
William Byron swinging for the fences. Who's next, Casey?
Oh man, now you just made me.
Casey was going to take a Toyota. Now she wants to take a Chevy.
No,
Justin Haley would be good.
Oh, you should have had him yesterday. You could have finished 2nd behind me.
You know what? Yeah, I'll take Justin Haley.
There you go. You go, girl.
Man, it's a.
I'll do my best.
Isn't
for
it
you.
A rip riding track right up
yeah.
top?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's this? Two
we
guys.
We can only use these guys one time a
yeah,
year.
Yeah, that's the
so.
Problem. Is I've already used who you're probably about to say.
Go ahead, TJ.
I'm going to go Eric Jones.
Oh, I was going to take him last.
He's going to get a win this year.
We're on TV.
Classy.
I know, but he just took my guy.
And if you wouldn't have taken 35 minutes into one spot off, I'd have given me.
Ready.
Hey, I'll sell him if you're 100.
I'm going to take Kyle Larson.
Oh, swinging. Swinging big, Freddie.
Swinging.
I'm going to take Chase Elliott. Y'all want to go big? We'll go big. I got the lead.
I didn't go
Did
that
you pick?
Big.
Oh, you picked Eric Jones, yeah.
The hell's wrong with
you? You picked Eric Jones.
I'm drunk. What do you want me to tell you?
Chase Elliott. Kyle Larson's fast, man. He keeps having bad luck.
I'll tell you who I'm going to pick this week. I'm going to pick Jimmy Blewett at the modified race at Riverhead Raceway. Is it this week, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Tommy's going modified racing at our home track. Yeah, Flo.
Oh, Flo does it.
Yeah,
okay.
Right? Yep. All dude, modified races are on Flo.
Flo is.
Tommy, so what happened now is two of my bet. So I've spotted for Jimmy Blewett for, I don't even know, since 2005, at least once a year, Turkey Derby. So now, and I spotted for Tommy, obviously, growing up and coming through the sport. So now they've both aligned, so I have no choice but to spot every damn modified race.
For free, that that's the at. Best. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't tell anybody that. Nobody else knows that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So they're going to our home track. Me and Tommy grew up at Riverhead Raceway, and they're going home this weekend to run. And
is it a big race there?
It's a tour race. Yeah, modified tour
will,
race.
Will the Beers kid be there?
Yeah, he's going to run the 64 car probably. Yeah. Yeah, okay. It'll be a big one. This is, it's actually going to be opening night for Riverhead because they rained out this week, so it'll be their first weekend of the year. Hopefully they do well, obviously.
I want to get up there sometime.
I do, too. I do want to go to Riverhead.
You don't have any idea. Like,
it's racing, man.
Oh, it's its own world.
If you think about all the drivers who came through there and raced there and then were successful down here, it's
It's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, Eddie DeHaan came from there, right?
Well, Eddie hit everything but the ambulance when he was racing, so you can't count Eddie racing, but he's a pretty
smart.
He's
told us some stories
he's been on fire, flipped. He's done it all.
Well, he's told me stories about you and him.
He's not scared.
Yeah.
Hey, the best, really funny Eddie DeHaan story from this weekend, right?
I moved him down, too.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Xfinity race this week. Doug Campbell does not spot during the Xfinity race because Penske has a deal.
Oh, my gosh. This is hysterical.
So
this might be what an
idiot.
I'm
getting a text in the middle of the race. Me and Brett and Doug are on his text chain during the race, and I get a text, and Doug's like, something's wrong with Eddie. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I don't even know. He's not, Justin's leading, and he's not watching the race.
he didn't even know he wasn't spotting.
He's playing on his phone. He's on his phone. So then, 60 to go, Eddie leaves. He just leaves. And Doug has a heart attack. Doug's like, oh, my God, what's going on? What's wrong with Eddie?
Something happened. Yes.
And finally, Brett's like, yeah, he was supposed to spot for Chase, and Chase didn't qualify. Oh, thank God. He was so worried about Eddie.
He was distraught.
He was distraught. He was literally distraught.
So Darlington was awesome. We had Red Farmer, Donnie Allison on stage with us, awesome. Man. Very humbling moment for me being from the state of South Carolina, my home track. But we're off to Kansas. I'm going to let you preview this race. You think it's going to be ripping the top. You think the Christopher Bells, Kyle Larson's, Martin Truex's.
Reddick.
Yeah, Reddick's. Those are your guys.
They're going to be Martin Truex. Once he gets in his zone of up top, man, he's pretty good too. So, and look, the racing's been great all year. I mean, we've had one probably race that got called out, but wasn't the product's fault. It was probably the tire was a little bit too hard, in my opinion.
Yep.
So once they're going to go back, and Goodyear will fix that, I guarantee. And then you got to, if you think about it, guys, you have to applaud the whole industry and what they did to what's happened yesterday. We didn't really talk about it today, but there was not many lap cars getting lapped yesterday. And at Darlington, with the speed slowing down because of the handling, the worse you start handling, the way worse you are at the end of a run. I didn't see, you look at the ticket board and you look watching the leaders, there was hardly any lapping going on. And that's what they were shooting for. That's what the industry was shooting for all the cars to run closer together. And you got to applaud everybody for working so hard, the teams, the NASCAR, the people who have developed it. Man,
this car's been a success.
Oh, they absolutely are. They are the worst race car to work on, in my opinion. But in the same breath, I've done with them, they are so fun to work on handling. To work on,
you can make small changes and get big benefits.
Yeah, I mean they stink to work. I hate them. I hate them. I really do. But I love them because they are so fun to get them right, to make them handle. And the unfortunate part is I think if they got a little bit more practice, the racing would be a little bit better because it would allow the guys to get the cars a little bit closer. Everybody, the smaller teams would get better than the bigger teams because they have less tools and they would use the track to work on the car.
They don't have the sim. They don't have the tire data. They don't have all the things.
They don't have the same information. Everyone's got a little bit bits and pieces of it, but you can work on it. I mean, when we went to the Phoenix test and, I went with the 27, Lars did a really good job, but by the second half of the second day, it took us that long to get the car right because we had no information, no simulation, just me and working on the car. And I left there, I'm going, man, if we all had practice like that, but if we're going to show up and have 20 minutes of practice, we're not even going to be in the ballpark because we started a second and a half off and we ended up 4/10 off at the end of the day in race run, which I thought was pretty good. And if you looked, I looked at the times in practice, usually it's 1.2 to 1.4 seconds off from the fastest car to the last place car that don't have problems. It was only 7/10.
A lot tighter.
At Darlington, 7/10. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. I look forward to Kansas, man. I love that racetrack. I love the Midwest. Those are my kind of people out there. Another unknown for us going into this weekend. We don't know how these cars are going to perform with the tire Goodyear's bringing, but, man, I'm pumped up about it.
Yeah, I mean, they've raced these type of mile and a halfs already. They have a good idea. The teams are going to be pretty good. It's going to be a fun race. Yeah.
Before we let you go, I got one question for you. Driving to Darlington, what two towns do you drive through? Little small town.
Tommy's also a Yankee. Let's see if
what towns do you drive through?
Pageland, and Monroe.
Okay.
There's one little town.
What about Hartsville?
What about one where you can't speed?
Oh, that little.
With an M.
I got two tickets in 4 miles there at once.
Did you?
Yeah.
You should have called Brett.
You know what stings you?
It's
B. What I don't know. B Hornet. What I don't
a
know.
B, but it starts with an M.
It starts with an M. The name of the TJ town.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
it's Mick. It's
Mick B.
No, it's Mick B.
I can write it down.
Oh yeah, MC. Yeah, I see it now.
He calls it Mac B.
He calls it Mac B.
Well, that's because it's Larry Mack, Mac Murray.
See, Tommy gets it. Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming on.
All right, guys. I appreciate it.
You got to come back.
Dad, where can we find TBR now? I know you're doing, I mean, just because you're not a Cup Series, you're racing probably more now than you ever have.
I am. I'm having a lot of fun with the Modifieds. I'm all over, up and down the Northeast. We got this young kid, Caleb Heady, running the Smart Tour. We're pretty much leading the points there. Got Jimmy Blewett and Michael Christopher Jr. running the tour races up north. And, you know, we started New Smyrna. We were 1 point out of the points lead there. Jimmy Blewett, we already won the points championship at New Smyrna in February at Speed Weeks.
Awesome.
One in Michael Jr. and some open races up north and Blewett. And we've already won one up at Thompson. So so far we're having a good year. Not as good year as good of year as Matt Hirschman is, but I think we're right. We're second on as, you know, as good as we're running to the competition. So I'm real excited. I'm having a lot of fun. Got a lot of work ahead of me, but
the cool thing is about Tommy, same thing, kind of like Tommy's not out for a guy with money. You know, you're talking about Jimmy Blewett, Michael Christopher are synonymous names in racing. Michael Christopher is Teddy Christopher's nephew. His dad, Mike, obviously drove for a long time. Jimmy Blewett, the Blewett family has been around forever. And it's just awesome for me to see, like I said, Jimmy's one of my best friends. Brett had the pleasure of going out drinking with us at my bachelor party. but, you know, so it really works out. I'm going to spot, I guess, I think I'm going to spot Loudon. I'm sure we're going to Martinsville.
You're not coming to Riverhead?
No, I'm not going to. I don't think I'm going to make it to Riverhead this week.
I guess I'm spotting.
You're going to have to spot this one. But I think we're going to run Loudon, right? You're going to run Martinsville, so I'll just spot those races. And I just look forward to it. I tell everybody all the time, if I could ever figure out a way for modified racing to make me the same amount of money as I could do Cup racing, I'd go modified racing every week of my life. But I always look forward to those opportunities to go back and work with Tommy and Jimmy, obviously. But, yeah, it's fun. And check them guys out. Smart Tour, Wear the Modified Tour, open shows at Stafford.
There's over 125 modifieds roaming the Northeast right now with all the different series. Yeah. And they're all good. They all have their pluses, minuses, but it's fun, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah,
we appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you, Tommy, as always. And thank you to our presenting sponsor, OfferPad. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to like, comment, share, post a screenshot on your Instagram of you.
Yeah, because all y'all that did that 2 weeks ago, we were ahead of the Dale Jr. download in the rankings of most popular sports podcasts. So
keep working on it.
We out. Holla.
Have a great week.
See ya.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Dirty Mo.